You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now bring you Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, with Roy Shulman.
Hi, this is Roy Shulman, and welcome again to Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, the show on Radio Maria that celebrates the Jewish roots of the Catholic Church, or seen the other way around, that celebrates the fulfillment, the completion, the full realization of all of the promise of Judaism in the Catholic Church and its sacraments, and of course in Jesus, who is the promised Messiah of Judaism. And that, in fact, is what I would like to talk about today, that is Jesus as the promised Messiah of Judaism. And there are a number of reasons for that. One is, of course, it's at the heart of everything, but we are also in this very beautiful period coming up on the expectation of the birth of Jesus, that is Advent, the season of Advent, which begins very shortly. And we're also in the liturgical readings at Mass in this very last period before the beginning of Advent, focused on readings about the second coming, which, of course, is yet another coming of Jesus. So I want to spend today talking about the messianic idea in Judaism, that is, the absolute centrality of the coming of Jesus, although, of course, within Judaism, they didn't know his name was going to be Jesus, but the coming of Jesus and how all of Judaism actually revolves around the coming of Jesus and the prophesied coming of the Messiah. So to do that today, I will be, to a large extent, drawing from one of the chapters in my book, Salvation is from the Jews, which was published by Ignatius Press a few years ago, chapter 4, which is about the messianic idea in Judaism. So I will be reading from that chapter and then discussing thoughts that arise from what I'm reading. So with that introduction, let me begin discussing the messianic idea in Judaism from Salvation is from the Jews. So beginning at the beginning of the chapter, the centrality of the Messiah in Judaism. The fact that Judaism has historically defined itself in large part around the coming of the Messiah should not be a matter of contention. It has been the consistent testimony of Jews in Judaism, starting with the graphical prophecies of the Old Testament, maintained in the apocryphal writings of the Second Temple period, that's from about 500 BC to about 70 AD, continued in the Talmud and by the great Jewish sages of medieval times, and into our times by traditional Jews. Now, why am I underlining this? This is me speaking out of the no longer reading. The reason I am even stressing this is because contemporary Judaism, that is, if you have a neighbor down the street who's Jewish and a kind of conventional, fairly secularized Jew, he may not actually even be aware that all of Judaism revolves around the coming of the Messiah. Much of contemporary Judaism has backed away from thinking and talking and praying and expecting the coming of the Messiah for two reasons. One of those reasons is because as soon as you start talking about the coming of the Messiah, you actually raise the question of Jesus. Could Jesus have been the Jewish Messiah? And it can introduce some uncomfortable issues for the Jewish person to deal with, such as the prophecies about the Messiah in the Old Testament and how closely they correlate with the story of Jesus, or the fact that taking the Old Testament seriously, if the Messiah was to come, he would have to have come before the destruction of the temple in 70 AD. So it's a kind of an uncomfortable situation in many ways for Jewish people today to be face to face with the question of the prophesied Messiah of Judaism. So that's one reason. The other reason is just the secularity of our age, the turning away from the supernatural in religion that we see not only among Jews today, but even perhaps more tragically among Catholics. For instance, we are in this period of the liturgical year where the readings are about the second coming at Mass. What percentage of Catholics in the United States today really think that the second coming is going to happen? That is, really think that life on earth is going to wrap up, that Jesus will return, And he will, as it says in the Creed, every time you go to Sunday Mass, he will come to judge the living and the dead. In other words, he will come, and that's it. He will judge the living and the dead. Of course, we all know that after we die, we are judged, but this isn't talking about that. This is talking about the second coming. And if you want to read about what Catholic dogma actually says about the second coming, you can pick up a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church and read it's around paragraph 670 to 677, somewhere around there, are the paragraphs about the second coming of Jesus. The creation and life on earth is not supposed to go on forever. It is going to go on until the second coming, and then Jesus is going to come, and then there will be the heavenly Jerusalem, but there'll no longer be life on earth. Now, what percentage of Catholics in the pews really expect this to happen? And I'm just using that as a kind of an analogy to say, well, that's kind of the situation you have with Jews today in, you know, how many of them really expect that the Messiah is going to come and change everything. And it's just a sign of the kind of secularity of our age that probably the majority of Jews today don't really consciously expect the coming of the Messiah, just as perhaps a majority of Catholics today are not really focused on the second coming of Christ and don't really expect it. So anyway, back to the text. I'm now going to read a passage from a tract on the Messianic Hope in Judaism, which is published by one of the largest Hasidic sects in the world, the Lubavitcher Hasidim. And it is just really a kind of a basic catechesis on the teaching about the coming of the Messiah in Judaism. Belief in the era of the Messiah has accompanied the Jewish nation since its earliest days. It is mentioned countless times in the Torah, in the writings of the prophets, and in the Mishnah and Talmud. Maimonides was the greatest Jewish rabbi of medieval times and is, in fact, the single greatest authority, basically, on Jewish doctrine. He died in the beginning of the 13th century. Anyway, Maimonides includes this tenet in his 13 principles of faith, which form the foundation of Jewish belief. The 13 principles of faith are it's the closest thing that Judaism has to the Catholic Creed, that is to a basic exposition of the non-negotiable elements of the Jewish faith. Many congregations include these principles at the conclusion of their morning prayers, and in which they say, quote, I believe with complete faith in the coming of the Messiah, and though he may delay, nonetheless I await his coming every day. The theme of redemption is found throughout Jewish teachings. Mention of the Messiah is found frequently in the prophets, particularly in the prophecies of Isaiah, aptly named the prophet of redemption. He provides a detailed description of future events, of the arrival and accomplishments of the Messiah, and of the redemption process itself. Now allow me to interject that, of course, Isaiah, who is named the prophet of redemption in Judaism, is called the proto-gospel in Christianity, the proto-evangelium, that in fact he is a precursor of the gospels from the Christian perspective precisely because he speaks so eloquently and so beautifully and so extensively about Jesus, about the Messiah who is to come. From the Jewish perspective, the prophecies of Isaiah is called the prophet of redemption for exactly the same reason. Back to the text. The belief in the redemption permeates our rich heritage. Its central role can be assessed by studying the prayer texts, which are full of references to the Messiah and the New Age. Three times daily, we recite the Amidah, a central prayer composed of 19 benedictions in which we ask for all of our needs. Six of these are devoted to redemption, the ingathering of exiles, the reinstallation of the High Court, Jerusalem, and the Temple rebuild, the arrival of Messiah, and so forth. Three times a day we pray, speedily cause the Sion of David your servant to flourish, and increase his power by your salvation, for we hope for your salvation every day. Waiting for the Messiah, anticipating his coming, is not simply a virtue, but a religious obligation. Maimonides thus rules that whoever does not believe in, and whoever does not eagerly look forward to, the coming of the Messiah, in effect, denies the whole Torah and all the prophets, beginning with Moses. As stated above in the popular formation of his 13 principles of faith, this is put as follows. I believe with complete faith in the coming of the Messiah, and although he may delay, nonetheless, I await his coming every day that he will come. Some authorities view this principle as an integral part of the first of the Ten Commandments, which charges us with the belief of God. In view of this legal obligation to await the Messiah, therefore, one of the first questions an individual is asked on the day of divine judgment is, quote, did you look forward to salvation? Close quote. Now I'll interject a little bit. I think this is unspeakably beautiful. What I am trying to underline here is that in its soul, all of Judaism revolves around the coming of Jesus. And the heart of Judaism is this eagerly awaited anticipation, love, hope in the future coming of the Messiah, who is, of course, Jesus, who was, of course, Jesus. And in this light, I think our hearts have to go out to our Jewish brethren who brought us Jesus in the first place because of this eager anticipation, because of this prayer for the coming of the Messiah, and the sadness that I think we should feel in the fact that they don't have the joy that we have in knowing him and loving him, in knowing what he wants, and as Catholics, in actually entering into this unspeakable union with him by receiving the sacrament of the Eucharist, by receiving his body, blood, soul, and divinity. So I'm basically trying to paint this picture that of the intrinsic yearning love of Jesus that's at the heart of Judaism, even though our Jewish brethren are not consciously aware that that is what it is. Of course, Jesus is aware that that is what it is, and Jesus is responding to that in his own way. And I would presume to say Jesus is asking us to pray that the fullness of this love might be realized by their receiving him as the Messiah. Now, going back to the text, this tract that I just read relies in large part on the writings of Maimonides, the single greatest authority of rabbinic Judaism. In his codification of Jewish law, Maimonides emphasized the obligation for all Jews to believe in the Messiah. Quote, the Messiah will arise and restore the kingdom of David to its former might. He will rebuild the sanctuary and gather the dispersed of Israel. But whoever does not believe in him or does not await his coming denies not only the rest of the prophets, but also the Torah and our teacher Moses. This obligation is even one of his fundamental 13 principles of the Jewish faith. Quote, the 12th principle concerns the days of the Messiah. It consists of believing and recognizing as true that he will come and not thinking that he will delay. Though he tarry, wait for him. One should believe in him, magnify and love him, and pray for him, in accordance with all the words of all the prophets, from Moses to Malachi. And whoever is in doubt concerning him or belittles his glory has denied the Torah, which explicitly promises his coming. According to Maimonides, this belief in the coming of the Messiah is the central duty of the Jew. Quoting from Maimonides, quote, when a man believes in all these fundamental principles and his faith is thus clarified, he is then part of that Israel whom we are to love, pity, and treat as God commanded with love and fellowship. Even if a Jew should commit every possible sin out of lust or mastery by his lower nature, he will be punished for his sins, but will still have a share in the world to come. He is one of the sinners in Israel. But if a man gives up any one of these fundamental principles, he has removed himself from the Jewish community. He is an atheist, a heretic, an unbeliever who cuts among the plantings. We are commanded to hate him and destroy him. So you see what Maimonides is saying here is that essentially a Jew does not lose his salvation by committing any sin or all of the sins in the book. He will have to pay with punishment for those sins, but he hasn't lost his salvation. But if he ceases to believe in the coming of the Messiah, which we know to be ceases to believe in the coming of Jesus, then he will in fact lose his salvation. Now, I'm not saying, lest anyone misunderstand me, I'm not saying that Jews who don't believe in Jesus are not saved. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that in the context of Judaism, faith in the coming of the Messiah has almost as central a role as faith in Jesus has in Christianity. It is the heart and soul of Judaism, just as faith in Jesus is the heart and soul of Christianity. And doesn't that make the reflection between Judaism and Christianity even more intimate, even more parallel, even more soul-stirring and beautiful, in fact? Now, going back to my text, unfortunately, in recent times, there has been an attempt in some quarters to rewrite the history of Judaism with the intention of showing that Judaism, including Judaism at the time of Christ, was never focused on the coming of the Messiah. Some of this is inspired by the modernist spirit, which has great difficulty in acknowledging the role of supernatural intervention in the affairs of mankind. However, it may also in part be motivated by a desire to deter Jews from considering the claims of Christianity. Explicit consideration of the messianic expectations of Judaism leads to some dangerous questions. How did Jesus' claims compare to the Jewish prophecies? When the Messiah comes, how will he be like Jesus and how will he differ? Do the necessary conditions for the coming of the Messiah still exist? If not, when did they end? How might that relate to Jesus' death? And so forth. On the other hand, if Jews can be convinced that Judaism never expected the coming of a personal Messiah, then they need give scant consideration to the claims of Christianity. Thus, excising the notion of a personal Messiah from Judaism is a way of protecting it from missionary approaches. Now, let me just explain that a little bit, is what I referred to before. But, of course, the fundamental approach of a missionary to a Jewish person is to begin to talk about the Messiah expected by Judaism and to talk about Jesus and to say, you know, Judaism was expecting the coming of the Messiah. Let me tell you about Jesus and the many, many ways that he was the perfect fulfillment of the prophecies in the Old Testament and that he perfectly fit the Jewish expectation of the coming of the Messiah and therefore, in fact, was the Jewish Messiah and therefore, as a Jewish person, you should be a follower of Jesus, the Jewish Messiah. Now, one way to cut that off at the pass and cut off a line of approach from the missionary is for the Jewish person to say, no, that's all a misunderstanding. Judaism never really expected the coming of a personal Messiah. And therefore, as part of a kind of anti-missionary approach, I believe, some Jewish authorities have kind of misguidedly tried to catechize some of the Jewish people into thinking that the messianic expectation in Judaism was never the expectation of the coming of a individual personal Messiah. Back to the text. Those who would like to eliminate the expectation of a personal Messiah from Judaism must find an alternative way to deal with the many messianic texts in Judaism. Some attempt to do so by redefining the messianic hope as a general hope for the betterment of society and recasting the Jewish nation as a whole as a sort of corporate Messiah that will bring about the social progress. Such was the approach of Moses Hess, an influential Jewish nationalist of the mid-19th century, who is credited with converting Karl Marx to socialism. In other words, you can think of Moses Hess as the grandfather of communism. If Karl Marx was the father of communism, Moses Hess was a kind of secular Jewish nationalist in the middle of the 19th century in London, under whose spell the young Karl Marx fell, and whose Moses Hess's kind of secular interpretation of the messianic impulse of Judaism was part of Karl Marx's inspiration for communism. Moses Hess wrote, quote, "Every Jew has the making of a Messiah in himself. Our religion has as its point of departure the enthusiasm of a race who, from its appearance on the stage of history, has foreseen the final purposes of mankind and which had the foreboding of a messianic time in which the spirit of humanity will be fulfilled not only in this or that individual or only partially, but in the social institutions of all mankind." I'm going to reread that, actually, because it is amazing, perfect, in a nutshell, translation of the messianic hope of Judaism into what became communism, what became this this renaissance, this rebirth of all of humanity in the mind of Karl Marx through communism. And it becomes very clear in this passage how that is a translation or a mistranslation or a misapplication of the messianic hope of Judaism. So let me just repeat that short excerpt that I just read from Moses Hess, the inspiring force behind Karl Marx and his communism. "Every Jew has the making of a Messiah in himself. Our religion has as its point of departure the enthusiasm of a race who, from its appearance on the stage of history, has foreseen the final purposes of mankind and which had the foreboding of a messianic time in which the spirit of humanity will be fulfilled not only in this or that individual or only partially, but in the social institutions of all mankind." And of course, Karl Marx tried to bring that about through the social institution of communism imposed on all mankind. This is a very common interpretation of messianism in Judaism today. It is, however, contradicted by the evidence provided by some 4,000 years of Jewish writings. Let us turn to some of those writings. Now, here in this chapter, I go through some of the dozens and dozens and dozens of messianic prophecies in Judaism, in particular in the Old Testament, which were most perfectly fulfilled by Jesus. And since we are coming up on the season of Advent, I think that I will probably save for next week's show the Old Testament passages that discuss the beautiful Advent of the birth of Jesus, because that will probably be a pretty good way to launch us into the Advent season next week. And when we come back from this short musical break that we're about to have in a moment or two, I will discuss the messianic promise in Judaism and the messianic prophecies in Judaism that come not from the Old Testament, but from other canonical Jewish writings, saving the Old Testament messianic prophecies, as I said, for next week. So back in a moment.
With all your heart.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We now return to Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, with Roy Shulman.
Hi, this is Roy Shulman. Welcome back to Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism. Today we've been discussing the messianic idea in Judaism and the centrality of that messianic idea in Judaism. And I think that this theme is probably going to continue into next week's show because we're already halfway through and I have a lot more to say. But at the moment, I think we have a caller who I would like to hear from. So are you there, Marie?
Yes, I'm here, Roy. How are you?
I'm well. So what is your question or comment?
My comment, first of all, I'm enjoying the show and love that, I mean, Jesus the promised Messiah of Judaism, you're fitting that in very well with all these quotations and citations from your book. I just wanted to comment, I thought it was so beautiful how you said that the Jewish expectation or desire for the coming of the Messiah is as central to Judaism as recognizing that Jesus is the Messiah to Christianity. And sort of play off of each other, if you think about it, is the Jews, as you said, every time they pray is, and the Messiah should come speedily in our days. But the Christians have accepted the Messiah, and even at Mass we say, you know, we profess your death, O Lord, we proclaim your resurrection, so you come again. Is that ingested the rest of the day? You know, how forward are Christians looking to that second coming, the way the Jews are looking to that first coming? It's, you know, there's a certainty that's there with Christianity that the Jews don't have, but there's that full expectation that at least the religious Jews have that maybe the cradle Catholics don't have, you know, and maybe we should try to unite on that to bring the Messiah back and fulfill us both. But, sadly, it's not all the Jews that are praying for the Messiah. This is the religious Jews that are doing the ancient liturgy. The majority of Jews today are not practicing Judaism the way it has been instructed, so the Messiah is not necessarily something that they're looking forward to. And that's something we should try to ignite. Among all Jews.
I certainly agree. I mean, I think that we will hasten the second coming if, I mean, first of all, if Jews become Catholic, we'll hasten the second coming. We know that from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So the second coming, the line is from paragraph 674, the glorious Messiah's coming is suspended at every moment of history until his recognition by all Israel. But I also think that if Jews turned back with their whole heart to Judaism and actually gave themselves heart and soul to the God of Judaism, that would go a long way in that direction because, of course, the God of Judaism is Jesus.
Yeah. That's, like I said, it's playing one off of the other. If we can just, you know, unite them, what a beautiful thing that would be. Another thing you were quoting from Moses Hess, And unfortunately, you mentioned the influence on Marxism, which was not a good thing. But Moses Hess, one of his great works was Rome and Jerusalem. And he put an emphasis on the institutional, administrative, outreach apparatus of Rome and the spirituality of Jerusalem. And, you know, Marx didn't just emphasized the collectiveness. He wasn't interested in the spirit. But that is both are actually coalesced in Rome. We have that is there by the church that Jesus founded, both the spirit and the soul and the power. And so it's, you know, again, that's both communities being tied to the same thing. If we can only, you know, unite and see that vision, we can bring him back soon. And
yes, although really the ultimate form of uniting is recognizing that they're one and the same, in the sense that Jesus is the Jewish Messiah.
Right, and as you've said so many times, this idea of if Christianity comes from Judaism, that Judaism is fulfilled in the Catholic Church and its sacraments.
And
so
its
that's
sacraments,
the thing.
Yeah.
There's no closer way to commune with God and be with Him than through those sacraments. And that's what we have to teach the whole world. That's the basic.
And just in case there are one or two listeners who aren't aware, I actually know who this Marie is, and she is a very observant Jew who has become a very enthusiastic Catholic.
Yes,
so she knows whereof she speaks.
and I can really say that the fulfillment is all there. It was just precursor before, and someone who's very steeped, and then just seeing fulfillment of every single aspect, it's just so wonderful.
I know you're on exactly the same page as I am, which is that looking backwards, in other words, from within the Catholic Church, looking backwards at, our Judaism and our love of our Jewish people and even our love of Judaism, I don't know if tragic is quite the right word, but it's heart-wrenching to see what they're leaving on the table, to see, the incredible overflowing cornucopia of gifts that Jesus is just dying to give them and that they're dying to have. And that all it would take is stepping across that divide, and they would have 10,000 times more than they ever hoped could exist. And that's what's motivating me in doing this show. That's what's motivating me in encouraging Catholics to pray for the conversion of the Jews. And I know that that's an awfully heavy weight on your heart also.
It's all in God's hands, but we have to do what we can do to enlighten and, try to show, like you said, no one would even begin to imagine what is waiting there once they enter into it. It's just, it's as close as we can get to God this side of heaven, and it will unite us to Him forever and ever. So,
that's right.
Anyway, all right, I'll let you get back to your lesson, Roy.
Okay, well, thanks for the call, and thanks for the kind of reminder to encourage everybody to, if you have it on your heart, to pray for the conversion of the Jews, just out of charity, just out of seeing, because we've been talking a lot on this show how basically Judaism and the Catholic Church are mirror images of each other. The distinction being that they're mirror images with a blank space where Jesus, the person, is. I'm looking at my Skype screen, how sometimes on these programs, if you don't upload a photograph of yourself, they just have this kind of outline of a, like an oval to represent a face. And that's kind of what it is. It's kind of like, it's Judaism is Christianity with a blank oval where the person of Jesus is supposed to be. Anyway, so I'm reading the section in my book called The Head of the Messiah in the Talmud. Now, the Talmud is the Jewish oral law, which was put in written form during the period about AD 200 to AD 600. And it consists largely of rabbinic discussions on a wide range of theology, ethics, and law based on the Torah. And it supposedly represents oral teaching received by Moses and passed on by him orally. In Judaism, it holds an authority second only to the canonical Jewish scriptures. The Talmud makes very clear that the expectation for the coming Messiah is for an individual. It also contains other prophetical insights about the Messiah, which are of particular interest to Christians. Let us then turn to the Talmud to examine some of what it has to say about the Messiah. The following discussion does not exhaust the Talmud's commentary on the Messiah. It simply represents some that is of particular interest from a Christian perspective. The first topic is when the Messiah will come. There is extensive discussion in the Talmud about when the Messiah will appear. Although the precise time cannot be known, and a quote from the Talmud is, "Three things come unawares, Messiah, a found article, and a scorpion," close quote, the prevailing conditions at the time he comes are known. Reading from the Talmud, "Thus has Rabbi Yohanan said, in the generation when the Messiah will come, scholars will be few in number, and for the rest their eyes will fail through sorrow and grief. Multitudes of trouble and evil decrees will be promulgated anew, each new evil coming with haste before the other has ended. In the generation when the Son of David comes, the house of assembly will be for harlots, Galilean ruins, Gablon lie desolate, the border inhabitants wander about from city to city, the wisdom of the scribes in disfavor, God-fearing men despised, and people will be as shameless as dogs, and truth entirely lacking. In the generation of the Messiah's coming, impudence will increase, esteem will be perverted, and the kingdom will be converted to heresy with none to rebuke them." Now, it's very interesting as a Christian to read this prophecy about what the world will look like when the Messiah comes the first time. This is, of course, when Jesus came about 2,000 years ago. And to compare these conditions with the conditions that we see in the New Testament that were prevalent when Jesus, in fact, did come. How, quote, few in number were the true scholars prepared to recognize him? How multitudinous were the evil decrees, beginning perhaps with Herod's slaughter of the innocents and ending with Pilate's condemnation of Jesus himself? Were the houses of assembly for harlots? What state was the wisdom of the scribes in? Were Jesus and the disciples, quote, God-fearing men, close quote, who were despised? Was truth entirely lacking? Remember Pilate saying, "What is truth?" And could the description of a kingdom converted to heresy with none to rebuke them refer to the rejection of the Messiah itself? That is, refer to the rejection of Jesus himself. So as a Christian, I think reading this passage from the Talmud seems very prophetic and also very beautiful, because it does seem to be a prophecy about the state of the Jewish world at the time that Jesus came. Now, there's also speculation in the Talmud about the date when the Messiah is to appear, and some of it is particularly interesting for those who accept that Jesus was the prophesied Messiah, because according to Jewish reckoning, the world was created in what is in our calendar year 3,762 B.C., or about 4,000 B.C. In that light, consider the following. From the Talmud, quote, "The world is to exist 6,000 years. In the first 2,000, there was desolation. 2,000 years, the Torah flourished. And the next 2,000 years is the Messianic era." Now, by Jewish reckoning, the world was created about 4,000 years before Christ, and about 2,000 years later, Judaism began with Abraham, and after another 2,000 years, Jesus came. Therefore, the 2,000 years of desolation between Adam and Abraham, the start of the Jewish covenant, 2,000 years of Torah, the Jewish covenant, and then 2,000 years of the Messianic era, Christianity, to be followed by the final redemption, that is, the second coming. Thus, this teaching works out almost perfectly from a Christian perspective, if the second coming is near. Let me go through that again a little bit more slowly. You see, basically, the Talmud is saying that the world was intended to exist 6,000 years, 2,000 years before the beginning of Judaism, 2,000 years from Adam to Abraham, 2,000 years from Abraham to the Messianic era, which would bring us, by Jewish reckoning, up to around 0 B.C., and then 2,000 years of the Messianic era, that is what we know as Christianity, from 0 B.C. to about 2,000 A.D. So, anyway, it's certainly suggestive. I'm not saying that, you know, the second coming is around the corner, But if this timeline prophecy were correct, the second coming would be around the corner. And I will just finally add that this passage in the Talmud ends with a rather heartrending commentary, "But through our many sins, all these years have been lost." And one can think that the 2,000 years from a perspective of the Jewish people, those 2,000 years of the Messianic era were lost by precisely their failure to be followers of Jesus. Now, the final topic, I think, about the prophesied coming of the Messiah that I will draw on for today in the time we have left is the discussion of what will happen when the Messiah comes. Now, this is very central to the issue of the evangelization of Jews, because one of the common objections that Jewish people make to the idea that Jesus is the Messiah is they say that, no, Jesus can't be the Messiah, because we know from the prophecies in the Old Testament that when the Messiah comes, everything will be different. The lion will lie down with the lamb. The swords will be beaten into plowshares and so forth. There'll be peace on earth, and that didn't happen, so Jesus can't be the Messiah, because there's still warfare, and if a lamb lay down with a lion, it would certainly have a very short life expectancy. However, that is a misrepresentation, actually, of Jewish teaching about what will happen when the Messiah comes. So let me read that passage or section from my book. And that may be the last section that we have time for today. What will happen when the Messiah comes? A common objection that Jews make against Jesus being the Messiah is that the Jewish expectations for what will happen when the Messiah comes have not occurred. These expectations are largely based on the exposition of the Old Testament in the Talmud. Yet in the Talmud, there is a fundamental ambiguity about what will happen when the Messiah comes. This world, Ha'olam Hazeh, is repeatedly contrasted with the world to come, Ha'olam Haba, but is highly ambiguous whether the world to come refers to the world after the Messiah comes or the world after the resurrection of the dead. In other words, whether the world to come in the Talmud is a reference to the first coming of Jesus or a reference to the second coming of Jesus. And the Old Testament prophecies in this area are quite cryptic, to the extent that even the Sansino edition of the Talmud makes the point that it's impossible to discriminate between the two. Similarly, Joseph Klausner, who, by the way, is an incredibly prominent Jewish theologian rabbi, who is so prominent that he is a central figure in one of Pope Benedict's books, in his Jesus of Nazareth series. I think it is the third in the series. Pope Benedict engages in an extensive imaginary dialogue with precisely this Rabbi Klausner about the person of Jesus. Anyway, Rabbi Klausner, in his Messianic Idea in Israel, states, quote, "Throughout the post-biblical literature, the Messianic age, the life after death, and the new world is to follow the resurrection of the dead are constantly interchanged. For the two latter conceptions, life after death and the new world, The Talmudic and rabbinic literature has only one phrase, the world to come. The world to come is frequently interchanged or confused with the days of the Messiah. So since even Jewish scholars admit that no consistent distinction is made between the various meanings of the world to come in rabbinic writings, it is somewhat unfair when Jewish apologists make the argument that Jesus could not have been the Messiah because he did not fulfill the quote, required, close quote, prophecies, that is, that the dead will arise, that there will be no more illness or war or suffering or death, etc. Yet, this is frequently done. For instance, the prophecy in Isaiah, he will destroy death forever and the Lord God will wipe away tears from all faces, is taken by Jewish apologists as referring to in the days of the Messiah rather than after the resurrection. However, later Christian revelation makes it clear that it refers to after the resurrection of the dead. Already in the 12th century, Maimonides himself, remember I mentioned Maimonides as the foremost, frankly, the foremost rabbinic authority on Jewish doctrine from the, he lived in the 13th, actually in the 12th, just into the 13th century. Already in the 12th century, Maimonides himself tried to clarify this distinction between the Messianic age and the final redemption. He wrote, quote, "The ultimate and perfect reward, the final bliss which will suffer neither interruption nor diminution, is the life in the world to come. The Messianic era, on the other hand, will be realized in this world, which will continue in its normal course. The ancient sages already said, the only difference between the present and the Messianic era is that political oppression will then cease. Let no one think that in the days of the Messiah, any of the laws of nature will be set aside or any innovation be introduced into creation. The world will follow its normal course. The words of Isaiah, and the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the kid, from Isaiah 11:6, are to be understood figuratively, meaning that Israel will live securely among the wicked of the heathens who are likened to wolves and leopards, as it is written, a wolf of the deserts does despoil them, a leopard watches over their cities. They will all accept the true religion, and will neither plunder nor destroy, and together with Israel earn a comfortable living in a legitimate way. All similar expressions used in connection with the Messianic age are metaphorical. In the days of King Messiah, the full meaning of those metaphors and their allusions will become clear to all." Now, I am not saying, this is Roy talking again, of course, that everything that Maimonides writes here is correct, because obviously he doesn't have everything right, as it turns out, about what will happen when the Messiah comes. But I am quoting this to point out something else, which is even the foremost authority of Judaism itself from a Jewish perspective says it's a misinterpretation to say that when the Messiah comes, the laws of nature will be set aside or any innovation be introduced into creation. And the images which are given by Isaiah of the wolf and the wolf dwelling with the lamb and the leopard lying down with the kid should be taken figuratively, should be taken symbolically. And I'm pointing this out to point out how unfair it is actually for Jewish apologists who are objecting actually to the claims of Christianity to be saying that Jesus couldn't be the Messiah because the laws of nature weren't suspended, when the true teaching of Judaism itself is that when the Messiah comes, the laws of nature will not be suspended, and those prophecies were to be understood figuratively. And I think I will probably have to wait till next week to continue with this discussion. I don't know if we have a caller. I think we probably don't. If we do, I'll know in a moment. But that probably takes us pretty much to the end of today's show. I do. I did, as I said at the outset of the show, had a couple of reasons for spending today's show talking about this, other than the fact that I find it extremely interesting and hope that some of you do too. But we are coming up on Advent, so it's a wonderful time to dwell within, so to speak, the Messianic prophecies within Judaism, the Messianic prophecies in the Old Testament, the earnest and a kind of heart-stopping expectation of the Messiah that is the heart and soul of Judaism. And we can enter into that because that's what the spirit of Advent is all about. The spirit of Advent is all about this joyful, hopeful, passionate yearning for the incarnation which is to come, the coming of the Messiah which is to come. So I will say this in the light of, again, encouraging you, should you be so moved to both fully appreciate what we have in knowing about the coming of the Messiah, and also pray that the Jewish people who are still in the state of sort of suspended animation of hoping for the coming of the Messiah, who already came, that is Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, might be given the grace to recognize that Jesus did come, the Jewish Messiah, and to enter into the fullness of the relationship with God, which he brought about by coming and which he left behind through the sacraments of the Catholic Church. So with that, I invite you to join us again next week on Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, when I will continue with this discussion. And until then, Thank you for listening, and please maybe pray for the conversion of the Jews, or for the Jews to enter into Advent not in a state of frustration, but in a state of fulfillment at really recognizing what happened or what is going to happen on December 25th, and what already happened, which is that Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism, came and did fulfill all of the promise of Judaism. So with that, please join us again next week on Jesus, the promised Messiah of Judaism. Bye for now.